Welcome back, everybody, to the Penn Stated Football Podcast. This is your host, Donnie Collins. With us today, as always, Sam Freeman, both of us from the Scranton Times, representing the Citizen's Voice as well, and all of pretty much just about any newspaper, I guess, in Northeastern and coal region part of Pennsylvania. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. So I have a story to tell you. First of all, I forgot to mention this to you beforehand. We have new intro music this week. You haven't heard it. I have. But my son did it for me. And
oh, nice.
Yeah. It's I'll send it to you before I put it on. But it's, you know, that's his passion, his music. And last week, the day after we did the podcast last week, which I guess it would have been Wednesday or Thursday, I go to wake him up in his room. And this is funny. He puts his TV on to fall asleep to. So he has been listening to the Penn Stated podcast to fall asleep, and it's playing in the morning when he wakes up. So the first thing I hear is either you or me or one of the guests from an old episode, but he started listening from the beginning and it puts him right to sleep. It's great. We are doing our job here.
We're doing the community a service.
Yes. Anybody who has kids who, you know, have to wake up at 6:30 in the morning, like my son does to go to middle school, just, you know, put the Penn Stated podcast on. It'll click up our views. It effectively gets them to sleep. You know, my son is not a huge football fan. English football he is, and Australian rules football he is, and rugby, and he also likes cricket, but not a humongous football fan as we know football fans to be in this country. So it's good. It's good at least he is learning maybe a little bit of something while he rests. So I want to thank him for doing that. I think it's the first thing he's ever done music wise that has gotten online. And I'm sure he's looking forward to hearing it. So anyway, Sam, we'll talk some football today because we're football fans, and Penn State it was really quiet week. First of all, news wise out of Penn State. Not, I don't believe there's been any commitments that hopefully I didn't miss any. Yeah, you know, there's been really nothing happening with winter workouts. Jackson Smolik has entered the quarterback controversy. He was the competitor of the day on Tuesday morning. So congratulations to Jackson Smolik. It's now a 3-quarterback race for the fans and the media. So that's all well and good. But one thing that did happen this week that I think is interesting, and I always enjoy talking about this, more fun than newsworthy, but the odds on the Big Ten championship started coming out this week, Sam, and I want to run some of this by you and see what you have to say about this. First of all, I want to say this is courtesy of Bet Online, and I don't know, I've made now 3 bets in my life, lost every one of them, and I've
dreamed. You're doing it the right way.
I am doing it the right way. I've bet against teams that I know pretty well twice now. I bet on Jair Brown once to win Super Bowl MVP. He didn't, almost, but I bet against Chelsea's soccer team against Manchester City, and that didn't work out for me at all. I thought Manchester City was going to win that game going away. I also bet on Indiana to cover the spread against Penn State in basketball. That didn't happen either. You know, I come from a time, Sam, when Indiana would beat Penn State in basketball. I don't know what happened and what changed there, but that is totally different now, I guess. But here we are. I'm going to discuss the Big Ten Conference Championship odds for the 2024 season, the early edition, courtesy of Bet Online. Obviously, you know who the favorite is, Sam.
Yeah, it's got to be Michigan, right?
No, Ohio State.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I guess Michigan's losing a bunch of people to the draft, and Harbaugh's gone, and it makes sense. I take it back. That was a bad answer.
Yeah, a lot of changes at Michigan. So I actually wanted to talk about Michigan. They're third. Oregon is second. They're 9-4 odds. We'll start with the top four because that includes Penn State. Ohio State 5-4 to win it. Oregon second at 9-4. Michigan 9-2. Their third favorite in the Big Ten. And Penn State at 6-1 is fourth. And here's what I want to ask you, Sam. Tell me why Penn State shouldn't be number two. And I'll make my quick pitch here. Ohio State, I get it. Not only did they hit the transfer portal hard, they brought back their guys. Now, change at quarterback, maybe that's a positive for them. Who knows? But they're loaded at running back. The receiving room is not what it was last year, I don't think, but still pretty good. Oregon, I think they hit the portal hard, but they hit the portal hard for starters. And I don't love the fact that is something you're relying on in this day and age. Ole Miss did it, and the Ole Miss has been fine. Plenty of teams have hit the portal for starters. Michigan State's one year they darn near win the Big Ten. The next 2 years they're terrible and they're digging themselves out. I think Oregon, they certainly got some talented players, but no continuity from last year. Michigan has lost a lot of guys. Tell me why Penn State shouldn't be number two. They're bringing everybody back. They made some good hires at offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator. And that's not me saying that. That's the national media saying that. I think Penn State should be a little bit higher than 6-1 odds to win this. And I think this could be a good season for Penn State. We'll talk more about that as it gets closer. But I think they're a good bet at 6-1.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't know where I would place them if I were setting betting lines, but I do think Penn State is a good dark horse bet in given the odds that have been placed upon it. I'm maybe a little bit more bullish on Oregon than you are, but for a different reason. I also think that, I mean, just joining the Big Ten for the first time is a big detraction. It's a that's a hill that they're going to have to overcome. And I do think that that's I do think that these ex Pac-12 teams joining in to the Big Ten is actually a it is a bigger challenge than maybe people are acting as it is. I think the conference gets deeper with them joining, Oregon, USC, et cetera. But I don't know that it's going to be a one-to-one comparison for them. I like Dylan Gabriel, the Oregon transfer, but like you said, it's another 1 year rental quarterback for Oregon. I don't know what that's going to look like, especially like I said, joining the Big Ten for the first time. So, and as we pointed out, Michigan's losing a bunch, on the coaching side, and then talent wise, we've talked about it. It feels like it's been the common refrain for the last couple of years, but Penn State's window feels like it's shrinking, and I think we're probably still in that window. I think we see it as, Penn State had last year was a striking season for them, a striking opportunity rather. And I think we can identify this season as an opportunity for Penn State for the same reason. I think it's a little bit of a chaotic off season. Like I said, Michigan being a little bit of an unknown, Ohio State, obviously, a very talent-rich team and everything like that, but they're going to have a new quarterback next year. Oregon is joining the Big Ten. USC, I don't know. It's just the question is more why not Penn State, and I think that's how you phrased it to me. And I'm with you. I think the coordinator hires are good. I agree with the general consensus on that one. I think Aller's got some juice to him. I think that, a new offensive coordinator might it has the risk of stunting some of that development, sort of getting him on the hamster wheel a little bit. But I don't know. I think that Penn State is a very talented team in a conference that is just invited in a handful of new spoilers. So, it's going to be an unpredictable season, I think.
The only thing I don't like about Penn State this year is, as far as winning the championship in the Big Ten, is the schedule. I think they have the toughest schedule, and not just who they play, but where they go to play them. I mean, they have a bunch of home games right out of the chute at home, at Beaver Stadium after they go to West Virginia. But their road games are tough. I mean, USC on the road, then home for the bye week, then at Wisconsin. I think that's a tough stretch. I mean, that's just something you don't see very often. And they haven't handled it well in the times that they have had the road game, bye week, road game kind of back to back to back. And the bye week helps in that situation, but I'm not sure it helps a ton because those two road trips are tough. That is, number one, the longest road trip you've had in a regular season game ever to go to USC. And then it's probably the second longest road trip you would ever make in the Big Ten traditionally to Wisconsin. So I think that's difficult. Then you have Washington. I don't know if Washington's going to be as good this year, and Ohio State back to back, albeit at home, but they're tough games. So you have a stretch of four games right there that are just brutal. So I think if how Penn State survives that is going to be huge. But you look at Oregon's schedule. Oregon doesn't have an easy schedule either. I mean, they have UCLA on the road, then they come back for Michigan State, then they have Ohio State at home, then they go to Purdue, then they welcome in Illinois, and then they have to go to Michigan. So they're back to back, they're back and forth across the country. And I don't know if you would rather have those near each other, or if you would rather have them kind of alternating with your home games, especially when you're the West Coast team. I think that's a tremendous advantage for the Midwest teams. The traditional Big Ten teams who aren't, it's just not as big a travel deal with those guys as it is for Penn State, Rutgers, and the Pac-12 teams. It's just not. So I think, and then they have Maryland at home. Then they have to go to Wisconsin. I mean, that's a tough road for Oregon. So I think they're certainly talented. I don't think Gabriel is as good a quarterback as Bo Nix, and I would have said that. Comparing Bo Nix at Auburn to Gabriel at Oklahoma. I know those Oklahoma quarterbacks to me are tough to judge outside of Oklahoma. They always look good at Oklahoma. So I don't know what he's going to be at Oregon. And I think it's easy to say, look, Bo Nix made the transition. This guy will too. He'll be a fit. I'm not so sure about that. I don't look at it quite that way. I think he's a very different quarterback than Bo Nix. So I kind of like Penn State as the number two in the Big Ten going into the season. I really, and the odds, I could, anybody can sneak in. And look, I'll be fair about this. Whatever, Bet Online or whatever it is, they didn't include Rutgers. They forgot Rutgers. They're not even included. And I'll tell you what, Sam, Rutgers could win seven games. If I'm gonna kill Penn State's schedule and kill Oregon's schedule, I got to tell you, Rutgers has an easy schedule. Rutgers can win seven games. So I'm not saying they're going to win the Big Ten championship. Their odds will not be good to do so, but they could win a bunch of games. So here's my next question for you, Sam. I want you to, and I sent them to you. So I hope you didn't look at them yet. I want you to tell me which Big Ten team has the lowest odds, and we're going to discount Rutgers because they're not listed for some reason. I want you to tell me which Big Ten team has the lowest odds to win the championship.
That's tough. Well, especially without Rutgers. I mean, I would have assumed Rutgers probably would have taken the biggest betting market hit. Is it Indiana?
It is Indiana.
Nice. Nice.
How'd you guess Indiana? I think they're going to be better than that. I don't think they're going to, I mean, I certainly think there's some teams worse than them. Let me put it that way.
I just they to me they don't have very much juice. I don't know. I 2 years ago, that Penn State Indiana game was not only just a, and I didn't think that, that Rose Bowl team for Penn State obviously wasn't bad by any stretch. It was a very good team, but Indiana just looked, I don't know, Penn State made them look not like a Big Ten team, which to me hasn't been, the Indiana that it's a little bit like the basketball thing. It hasn't been the Indiana that I really remember. But it's maybe more of a product of, I think the Big Ten is, Michigan State would probably be down there for me too. I don't know. I don't know. Indiana's just, I don't know what they offer. I'm interested to hear why you think they might be better than people might think.
Yeah, they're 250 to one. That's the lowest odds of any listed team. Rutgers is not listed to win the Big Ten. Because I just think that I didn't love Purdue last year. I think Purdue could be worse than Indiana. And look, some of these teams in the West, and I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but they played a West Division schedule. This is not going to be a West Division schedule for Purdue or for the Golden Gophers. And I'll tell you who I think is going to finish last. And I hate to say it because I think David Braun did a great job last year, but Northwestern, they're not sneaking up on anybody anymore. Unless this guy is a real savant as a coach. I think they got away on emotion last year. They're 150 to one odds. to win the Big Ten championship, which I think is really, really high for Northwestern, considering the talent they have. I would have them at the bottom. I think they could be, I think they could be the worst team in the Big Ten this year. And it's just a gut feeling because I didn't think, I think they did it without a whole bunch of talent last year. I think they did it on guts and smarts and all that. And I don't know if that's going to be the case for them this year. Do you want to go over the rest of them? See who we,
Yeah, where's Iowa at?
Oh, you're going to love Iowa. You're going to love Iowa. USC is fifth at 25-1. And I think that
Okay.
might be, if I'm looking to maybe throw 10 bucks down and win a couple hundred, I think USC is as good a bet as you're going to get in the conference with that. I think they have the talent to win. I don't think their schedule is brutal. They're used to kind of playing the national schedule. I think USC is going to be the Pac-12 team that adjusts best to this. So they're at fifth at 25-1. Iowa is sixth. They're 33-1.
My goodness.
I think that's way too high.
Come
And
on.
I
Come on.
it's a joke. I mean, the reputation Iowa has nationally for being a team that could win games with no ability to win to do anything on offense is staggering to me. The national media loves Iowa. They have every year they have five All-Americans off that team. Every year. How is it possible? How is it possible that 33-1? Who do they have that scares you?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you would think they have to get better with a new offensive coordinator, but how much better? I mean, because they're you said sixth in the Big Ten, they have the
They're
sixth best
sixth.
odds.
Yeah, sixth.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that puts them above. Look, I know Washington lost their coach and they're losing Penix and everything, but I don't know. Iowa.
Puts them above Nebraska. I don't think they're better than Nebraska
I
next
mean,
year.
now of course Iowa's going to go win the Big Ten and people can clip this, but I don't see it. I don't even know. I would love to hear the explanation. I mean, I guess it's a my most charitable explanation is the betting lines are set to make money, and I guess people are more bullish on Iowa than they should be every year. And I guess maybe it's to convince people to put money down on Iowa to win a conference they're not going to win. But I mean, I have my reservations about USC. You brought them up. But, my reservations about USC are, how are they going to transition to the Big Ten in the sense of Lincoln Riley is an offensive genius. He's known for the high octane offense. It's the defense that typically struggles. I know they just fired Alex Grinch, but they'll have a new defensive coordinator, new defensive system. I'll believe it when I see it. And that's my big concern about them in the Big Ten is the Big Ten is known for defense. It's known, but the flip side of that is the Big Ten may not, other than maybe in Ohio State and Michigan recently, and even Michigan plays a different style of offense. But the Big Ten's not necessarily known for the high powered passing offenses. It's your traditional, all the Big Ten stereotypes. It's a conference that Iowa can compete in. It's smash mouth style football, and so perhaps USC can zig where everyone else is zagging. And so my question about Iowa is, and I don't know their schedule off the top of my head. Maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong.
I
But
got it for you.
oh, do you? Do they? Do they? My question is here before we run through it. Do they play USC?
No.
Okay, well, so that I mean that benefits them. But my question is about Iowa. They have no offense, and now this influx of Pac-12 teams. I have questions about how they transition to the Big Ten. But the inarguable truth is they're coming in with a different style of offense than the Big Ten is maybe used to defending. And Iowa's defense is typically very good. I don't have any doubts that they can play well against some of these Pac-12 offenses, but you're going to have to score points against Lincoln Riley. You're going to have to score points against, Oregon. It's you're just not going to be able to get by on the scores you're putting up against Northwestern and Indiana. It's just not going to happen.
They got a really good Big Ten West schedule this year. I'll be honest. I mean, that's what they got. They got a really, really good schedule. And but here's my there is enough good offense on here to be a problem. They got Minnesota on the road. They got Michigan State, Northwestern at home, Wisconsin at home, which is a game I don't think they'll win. They're at UCLA. Everyone's got the one West Coast trip. They got UCLA. That'll be a fun matchup. That might be a 6-0 game out there at the Rose Bowl. They have Maryland on the road, and they have Nebraska at home to round it out on the day after Thanksgiving. But yeah, they also they're at Ohio State. That's going to be a bloodbath. I mean, look, here's my thing with Iowa, and I probably have complained to enough people that this is going to sound redundant. Look at the Penn State game last year, and every Penn State fan complains about how bad the offense was, quote unquote bad, all year. Look what they did to Iowa, and look what they did to that defense. Phil Parker won the Broyles Award. They have all Americans all over the place. They have all Big Ten players all over the place. How? They couldn't gain a yard. Iowa sucked. They sucked. They couldn't do anything at all. And that's when they had McNamara. There was no excuses for Iowa coming to the game undefeated, and Penn State just manhandled them. And I get it. The odds makers are going to say, well, Penn State's quite a bit of a heavier favorite than Iowa. They are, but there's more Penn States coming in. They do have Washington. Washington's going to play some offense. I could see Iowa losing 5, 6 games this year, no problem, even with their schedule. It's not great. They're going to win their three non-conference games. But I don't know. I think it's a typical overrating of Iowa here, and that's fine. I get it. Someone, every people in Cedar Rapids and Iowa City bet too, but it's me. I don't know. I can't look at Iowa and say that's a team that I think has even a remote chance. Yeah, they're being given a pretty solid chance here. They're being given a fighter's chance. I don't get it. Who's behind Iowa? Who do you think's behind Iowa? And I would have loved this pick last year.
Right behind Iowa,
Right behind Iowa, 50-1.
and you would have loved
Two
this pick last
teams at
year.
50-1. One of them would have been a great pick at 50-1 last year. The other one I would have really liked at 50-1.
Based on, I feel like that's a hint. Is Maryland in one of those two?
Yes, Maryland's 50-1. I would have loved. I would really like Maryland. Now the other one would have you'd have paid out a bunch of money because it's.
Oh, woof.
Well,
Is it UCLA?
no, Washington.
Washington.
Yeah,
Oh, duh.
Washington's 50-1. Yeah,
Yeah.
I don't like. I'm okay with Washington at 50-1. I think there's a
Yeah.
chance they recover. They've done some good things. What Jed Fish has done. He's kept the transfers that were coming in there. He's kept them on board. I think he's done a really nice job with that and kind of kept Washington as together it was going to be after DeBoer left. But they're not going to be as good without Penix. That's they've lost too much. I don't think they're going to win the Big Ten, but they're a solid choice there, I think. And if you're looking for an underdog at 50-1, they're a better bet than Iowa. At 33-1.
Yes, they are.
So and I guess if you're a Pac-10 guy or Pac-12 guy, whatever, you look at USC and Washington, you might like Washington at 50-1 over USC at 25. I don't, but I think you can go with that. So you got Nebraska at 75-1 coming in. And we're approaching the team that I think is grossly underrated here. Just grossly underrated. UCLA is 80-1. So is my grossly underrated team. Wisconsin's going to be a lot better this year. A lot better. They're 80-1 as well. Second year for Fickell. I just like Wisconsin's stability. They're laying in the weeds. It's been years since Wisconsin's been a contender, a legit contender, and I think they're ready to be. I think they could finish top five.
Yeah, I mean, if you, I hate to keep harping on this, but if you were to ask me between Iowa and Wisconsin, which team is more likely to finish top five, I mean, I would pick Wisconsin.
100%. I'll get your Wisconsin schedule here. They weren't great last year, and I generally think they're overrated. I think they get the kind of scheduling consideration that Iowa got this year, because they've had years when they were the quote unquote favorite in the Big Ten West and didn't get Iowa or didn't get Ohio State or Michigan. That's nice scheduling. But here's the problem with Wisconsin. They get Alabama. They have a non-conference game with Alabama, so I think everyone's kind of looking at that, but it doesn't matter in the Big Ten standings. They start at USC, they're at Rutgers, at Northwestern, at Iowa, at Nebraska. They could be favored in all but one of those games, and I think they could win them all. They're the type of team that beats USC.
Well, and especially the first week of the first Big Ten game of USC's, experience. That's maybe a trap game. I'm with you. I think USC is probably favored in that game, but Wisconsin's the perfect type of Big Ten team to spoil that welcome.
Oh, that's the actual perfect Big Ten opponent in the first game for USC. I mean, to show you what it's all about. I mean, here you are. It's first game in the conference. You're going nuts. Your fans out there kind of laid back, and here comes Wisconsin, just going to hit you in the mouth. That's the way they're going to play. That is going to be a solid team. Now their home schedule not as easy. I mean, after they have Purdue, they have. Believe they have Minnesota. Yeah, they have Purdue, Minnesota, and in between it's Penn State and Oregon. So they're gonna have to, they'll have a tough time with Oregon. That's exactly the kind of tough team they'll have a tough time with Oregon. And Penn State always plays well there. I mean, I don't want to say always, but they typically play pretty well at Wisconsin. I think that'll be a big, that's their big stretch. That's like, we talked about earlier what Penn State's big stretch would be. That would be Wisconsin's, and especially if they survive that Alabama bye week USC stretch, if they get out of that 1-1 with the loss being to Alabama, if they beat USC, they're going to be really feeling good about themselves, and I think they should. I think there's some good head coaches. Matt Rhule's one of them. They didn't, and Fickell's another. Obviously, they didn't have as great a season in their first year as you would expect of a big time coaching hire. They didn't turn around as quick, but I think they will turn those programs around. I think they'll be very good. They don't have Indiana and Rutgers. I mean, they have pretty good Big Ten programs. That they're going to have some resources there. They're going to be able to build off the culture that was already there and recruit the type of kids that they want to recruit out of areas that really want to play for those two schools. I mean, I'm high on those two this year.
I think that the Big Ten has had this reputation of being a deep conference, and we've sort of pushed back on that in the past of, in saying it's only deep because it's artificially deep. The West is clearly inferior to the East, but the West all play each other, and it creates this perception of anybody can get beat at any time. Now that it's kind of all one big thing, I do feel like the Big Ten is decent. Now they have the transplants from the Pac-12, but bringing up that Wisconsin USC matchup, that's a deceptively good matchup. It doesn't sound like it on a national scale at first, that's the type of thing that. And I think for the Big Ten, that needs to be a good game. That's something that I think the Big Ten brings in these Pac-12 teams to compete with the arms race of the SEC. I think the changes to college football are we're not even halfway to whatever the final form of this is. When it especially when it comes to the court ruling that came out recently with Tennessee and I think it was Virginia, we're poised for a massively different landscape as it is. So, the Big Ten bringing all these new teams in makes sense from that perspective, sort of changing with the landscape. But I think it also allows the Big Ten to be what it's been billed as for real. It sort of patches over some of the gaps that the Big Ten West has put in the conference. I don't know. I think it's a. I think this has the potential to be one of the better Big Ten seasons in recent memory for that reason. Not only some of these exciting matchups that we wouldn't have seen in a regular year, that are now conference matchups, but I think there are some teams that can really put themselves on the map in unexpected ways.
We'll be back in a couple of minutes here to talk about the all James Franklin team. We'll do receivers and linebackers. Is that what we settled on for this week, Sam?
Yes, it is.
All right, I can't wait. The all James Franklin team is growing in popularity. I've gotten a lot of feedback on it. Sam, your college roommate emailed me
about. He told me that. He didn't say what he said, but he said he was going to send an email.
He's got a good suggestion for the wild card episode, and we'll do that for the wild card episode in 2 weeks, I guess, whenever that. Yeah, I guess because next week we're going to do quarterbacks and defensive ends, and then we'll do kickers, punters, and the wild cards, and we'll probably devote the whole episode to breaking down that James Franklin team, unless a lot of stuff's going on. But today, I think definitely the most this is the day we're going to leave players off the list who people are going to be like, what are you guys thinking? We're going to do receivers today. We're going to do linebackers today. And receivers is where we're going to start. We agreed on that beforehand, and we'll do three receivers because Penn State uses three receivers, Sam. But do you want first pick here or first pick at linebackers?
I'll do first Cowboys pick at linebackers.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought Sam would
no
take first
spoilers,
pick at linebackers.
But I have a pretty good idea of who I'm taking there. So
Mr. Dallas Cowboy over there. That's a good idea who he's taking among the Penn State linebackers. And I wanted second and third pick there anyway. So we'll do receivers. And I guess I have to take the first pick here. And I will tell you this. I have the stats written out, and I know who I'm going to take number one. I knew from the beginning who I would take number one at receiver. But it was closer than I thought when I went and reviewed the numbers. When you think about the impact guys had, it was closer than I thought. I'm going to take Chris Godwin. I'm going to do the right thing because I think he was the best receiver. The NFL career has borne that out. Godwin in the Rose Bowl was unbelievable. And I put a premium on how well you play in the biggest games. That was the biggest game of his era. Played well in the Big Ten championship game too. Played well in the against Ohio State that year. But I really thought the Rose Bowl separated him from everybody else. But Godwin, 154 career catches, played three seasons. You know what other game he was big in? When you remember it now, and he was just a freshman that year, was the Pinstripe Bowl. And I think you could look at the Pinstripe Bowl now and say, and roll your eyes, it's a secondary bowl game. Ah, it's just a Pinstripe Bowl. I love the Pinstripe Bowl, first of all. But that was a huge game for Penn State. That was the return to bowl games. That was a year that they might not have made one anyway. They had a really scrap and claw to get in there. And then they played Boston College in that game, and I thought it was a huge win for them. I really did going forward. I thought that was a very big game, and Godwin played well in that game. 154 career catches, 2,421 yards, 18 touchdowns, impressively 15.7 yards per catch. I think Godwin is a solid first teamer.
Yeah, I was very interested to see who you could pick first because, you know,
way closer than I thought.
And it's one of the most combative positions, I think. I think I probably would have gone Godwin as well. So it works for all the reasons you said. I mean,
And I'll say this, it was close between three guys.
Yeah, it's there have been more receivers at Penn State under Franklin than I think people give the program credit for. If you want to credit the player, you want to credit the recruiting, you want to credit Franklin, whoever it may be. When you actually start looking at the list, I don't associate Penn State with being this wide receiver hub in my head, just on a knee-jerk reaction, but there are a lot of dudes on this list that deserve to be here.
Yeah, they've had good receivers over the years. They really have. I mean, even dating back, Allen Robinson was outstanding. He might be my number one. If Robinson played 1 year for Franklin, I might have put him number one.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame you.
No. So you get a chance to take the next two. I would have probably the next two guys. If you don't pick one of the next two guys, I'm going to be very happy because I'll just round it out and be satisfied with that. But I thought it was very, very close between three guys stat wise. I think Godwin was a little different maybe, but the next guy The next guy I knew I was going to consider. The third guy, I wasn't sure.
I think with my two, I'm going to take Jahan Dotson.
Got to.
Yeah, it's you know, he's somehow, I think even in recent memory, I think he's somehow slipped back under the radar, which is sort of where I felt like he spent a majority of his college career sort of as a hidden gem at Penn State. You know, there was a little bit of, you know, national, I don't want to say backlash, but some questions when he was drafted in the first round. And I was sitting there going, he's obviously a first round talent. You know, and I think, you know, in a weird way, he's dipped back under into not obscurity, but, you know, I think people, perhaps because Washington in the NFL is so bad, you know, people are forgetting about Jahan again. But, you know, at Penn State, Jahan was just, I mean, him and Clifford's connection was, you know, I don't know if Clifford is the quarterback that he is without Jahan there, frankly. I mean, everybody knows the circus catches and you know, this, that, and the other thing. But, you know, to me, he was so consistent. We talk about the receiver deficit from this previous season with Penn State. And it's easy to say, oh, yeah, if you had a first round caliber receiver, you'd be better, obviously. But I think what's to me the most impressive about Jahan Dotson's career isn't the one-handed catches and the big plays. It's the fact that it seemed like every game he was good for, you know, 5-6 catches, 80 yards, a touchdown here and there. You know, it's he was just as consistent as a college receiver can be.
Jahan, to me, you couldn't stop him. There was nothing you could do. I mean, you could just toss him the ball off the line and he was going to make people miss. He was kind of like a running back at that point. But he was also a guy who could beat you deep. He was a great route runner. Nobody could stop him. The one-handed catch in the Ohio State game over Sean Wade, he had a bunch of catches like that. You know, one of those receivers where you knew he was getting the ball and you still couldn't prevent him from getting the ball. Anything he did was better than what the cornerbacks against him could do. And he faced a lot of great cornerbacks. There were some great cornerbacks at Ohio State and he torched them. Michigan had great quarterbacks and he was better than them. You know, there was so many ways Dotson could beat you. He was such a weapon. I even threw a couple of passes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dotson was so good. He's a solid first teamer. He's probably, you know, he's a second pick for us at receiver. But I would say if you're, again, drafting, he's a top five draft pick.
Of the teams right there. I think so. And you brought up the fact that he could beat you so many different ways. You know, he also doesn't seem to fit. It's even more impressive to me that he, like you said, he could be the deep threat. He could be the classic possession number one receiver type guy. He could beat you in a contested situation, but he doesn't strike you as the archetype of that style receiver. He's only 5'11". You know, when you think of the guy that can do all those things, you think of like, you know, a Marvin Harrison Jr., you know, a 6'3", you know, just you don't expect a, you know, 5'11" guy to go out there and do that. And so it's almost, I don't want to say he overcame, because that was never, he never had that aura to me. But
now, and he was, if you think back to his recruiting class, I think he was the third highest rated recruit in that class. He was a guy who was at UCLA. He was going to go to UCLA and then backed out of that. I think he was just kind of always an under the radar guy until he wasn't. And he was just this guy dominating games. I think of the guys on the list, very few of them got considerably better as their careers went on. He got considerably better. He went from being a pretty good prospect as a freshman to a really good player as a sophomore to an unstoppable player as an All-American type player as a senior. He didn't disappoint at any point. Never had a bad game. Really. He never had a bad moment. Disappointing ones, Minnesota game. Maybe, I guess you can consider that, but certainly I think he was the top player on the field either side for most of his career. That's as good a duo as any Big Ten team is going to have at the top.
I'd put him up against, you know, Penn State may not have the depth of an Ohio State receiver room, obviously. You know,
Olave or Wilson or any of those guys.
But if you go, you know, top two against top two, that's a pretty good group.
Yeah.
In Godwin and Dotson. This
What do you got at
one's
three?
the one I'm nervous about.
All right, because there's two guys. I'd be happy to put either of these two guys on the second team or the first two, statistically. But there is a bunch of guys here. I mean, it is an interesting group.
Think for the third pick, I'm going to go Deshaun Hamilton.
Okay, I can't argue that he's not the guy I would have picked. But I
It's
can't argue it.
tough,
Can't argue
but
it.
I think I go Deshaun Hamilton. He's he's he was he's in this group that deserves to be considered for the first team. I'm excited to see how we flesh out the second team, but he burst onto the scene as a freshman. And I wonder if, when we receive the feedback, if Deshaun will be a somewhat unpopular pick at the first team, because in his sophomore and junior years, you could make the argument he dipped backwards a little bit. You burst onto the scene as a freshman and have what, 900 yards receiving or whatever it was. And then the next season he's got a little under 600. But for me, number one, his touchdowns go up later in his career. But then number two, just those teams went in the 2015, the 2016 teams. The Penn State's offense was just a different situation than it was
Yeah.
in 2014. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? It's somewhat understandable that your production would dip on in those scenarios.
Yeah,
I don't know.
he yeah,
That's
you
where
look
I'm
at
at.
who's in 14, he was pretty much the offense. Godwin was a younger player at that point. He wasn't a consistent contributor. And as Godwin emerged, as Mike Gesicki emerged, as Saeed Blacknall and DeAndre Tompkins started taking catches. They took catches away from Hamilton, but what Hamilton did really well was he'd find the soft spot in the zone, and he'd be the security blanket. And the numbers bear it out. I mean, what's the receiver supposed to do? He's supposed to catch the ball. Hamilton had 30 more catches than anybody else during the Franklin era. He had 214 catches. Now that's 30 more. That's 31 more catches than Dotson, who was well ahead. And Dotson was 30 ahead of Godwin. So you want to look at the numbers that way. Hamilton was the volume of catches he had is just tremendous. He had 2,800 yards. That's more than anyone else. Not a ton more than Dotson. I think he had 30 more catches and 90 more yards than Dotson. So that kind of tells you a little bit of a difference there. But he had 18 touchdowns. That's second. I think you certainly have to put Hamilton on the. He's either the first or the final third teamer, or final first teamer, or the first second teamer to me.
Yeah,
I think that's where
agreed.
Hamilton has to fit in there, just because of the production. And he was a shifty receiver. You had to pay attention to him, and he kind of made Godwin and Gesicki open down the field. And Blacknall back then, Blacknall was a pretty good deep threat too. So yeah, I like Deshaun Hamilton. I thought it was super consistent. The numbers weren't as good as they were the second half of his career as they were the first, but I still think he as a player was consistent. Make my first second teamer pick because I think it's an obvious one. I have to take Hamler. And here's what I like. And Hamler was the other guy I was considering for the first team. And I thought it was close. Hamler had 1,600 receiving yards in his career with less than 100 catches. He was
Yeah.
such a big play threat. And that's what, I mean, in a lot of ways, he and Dotson. Now, Dotson did it a completely different way, more consistently than Hamler did. But Hamler's another one of those guys who could take the swing pass and take a big yardage. He did that a little bit more than Dotson did. And Dotson was a bit better of a downfield target than Hamler was, but Hamler had so many moments. And here's the thing I like about Hamler. The number one stat I like. He scored on 13% of his catches. The only other guy who was even close to that was Dotson. So he and plus you got him as a kick returner. I love KJ Hamler here. 16.9 yards a catch in his career. That's easily the highest of any of the receivers who played a bunch during Franklin's tenure. And there was years where he was the offense.
Yeah, he's somebody that I gave consideration at that first team spot for all the reasons you said. And I've come around to this. I think my initial impression of him when he was playing was, he was just a, I sort of wrote him off as just a deep threat. But as time has gone on, you sort of reflect on his career, and I don't know that that was the case. Just because he, like you said, just because he scored on 13% of his catches doesn't mean that he was just a run down the field, we'll chuck it up to you type guy. It was just when the ball was in his hands, he was that type of threat that, any mundane play could end up being an 80-yard play just because he was so athletic, so shifty. And then also he was, I do think he played the typical receiver role for the team, as needed as well. Like I said, his route tree wasn't just post and streak and that's it. He was actually well-rounded, and I think that the big plays can almost dull his impact in your split second thinking.
And this is something that Penn State fans aren't going to want to talk about, but I'm going to mention it. They lose to Appalachian State without KJ Hamler. So I forget what year that was. Might have been 19, but I think that puts him on that, not all your big games are against Ohio State and Michigan. Some of them, when you play well in a game like that, where you're the difference maker in a game where you could lose when nobody thinks you're going to lose. I think that's kind of somewhat the brilliance of Hamler. My next pick, I'm going to do it. I'm going to take Parker Washington, and I'm going to be real quick about it because it was a tie between him and another player for me. And the difference is, and they both had a big game in their career, like a big trademark game. And the difference is Parker's was in a loss because it was that Ohio State game in 2022, where I thought he was really, really dominant at Beaver Stadium. But Parker Washington, 146 catches, 1,920 yards. He's in that cut below the top three guys, Hamilton, top four guys, Hamilton, Hamler, Dotson, and Godwin statistically. But he's certainly right there with all but one other guy. And I'm dying to see if you're going to take this one other guy sixth overall, because that will be very interesting.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think had he stayed another year,
Yeah, that's the big key.
he was a good enough player that he probably would have been in that first team conversation.
Yeah, for
You know,
sure.
if you're strictly going from traits and skill, but he didn't. He ultimately left just by default. His impact is sort of it's I don't want to say detracts. Him leaving early just detracts from his impact, but in a game where we're picking where we're picking the best the of all time for Franklin, he has to fall out because of that.
I'm dying to hear who you're taking here because I think you can go so many ways and I can argue so many other guys.
I don't feel good about this pick.
Oh, I know you're gonna do it. You're gonna do it.
But here's why, and before I even say his name, I'm gonna have you tell me who number one who you would have picked after I make this pick, and who was right around the edge, because I have a justification for why I think this is the right move. I don't think people are gonna like it. Maybe I'm wrong though. Who
I know
knows?
exactly who
I'm
it's
gonna
going to be.
take Mitchell Tinsley.
Oh, that is not what I thought you were going to do.
Really?
That's not what I thought you were going to do.
I'm gonna take Mitchell Tinsley.
Okay. I would have
Who
too. Would have taken
really?
Tinsley.
Okay.
Yeah. And here's why.
Wow.
Well, so, I mean, I'm going to run these numbers by you. Parker Washington, 146 catches, 1,920 yards, 12 touchdowns, 13.2 yards per catch. Keandre Lambert-Smith, 126 catches, 1,700 yards, 11 touchdowns, 13.7 yards per catch. Very similar. And Keandre, and another thing, in a year, we might take Keandre because Keandre's numbers are going to be so much better, assuming he does anything this year. But he's been so inconsistent, I can't put Keandre on the team. He was so absent down the stretch last year, and maybe that's
Yes.
recency bias, but he did have the Rose Bowl, where he was dominant. And he did have a couple games earlier this year, dominant in 2023. But I would have picked Tinsley because I think Tinsley's a better player.
Yeah, I agree with both. I think he was more consistent than Keandre. I think I don't think you can make the case that Tinsley disappeared as impactfully as Keandre did. Maybe that's unfair because of the team that Tinsley was on in his sole Penn State campaign. But I even look back on some of the some of these Penn State receivers that you brought up Blacknell earlier on, and he obviously scratches a certain itch for Penn State fans given the time period he played
The
and
team he was
everything.
on,
But I mean his and again I'm comparing Tinsley to somebody that I wasn't going to pick, but so maybe it's unfair. But year to year, Blacknell had, I'll throw out his freshman year because that's not fair. But he had junior and senior year, he had 347 yards, 289 yards. He wasn't a volume receiver. He was a, his averages are crazy. Sophomore year, 31 yards per catch. Junior year, 23 yards a catch. Senior year, 17 yards a catch. And he, I think that he has a place in people's hearts as a result of that conference championship run. But Tinsley had 51 catches, 577 yards, five touchdowns in a year where they needed somebody to play that role. And you could make the argument that Tinsley could have T Tinsley was a good enough player that he could have achieved more than that with more time.
I agree. You extrapolate his stats. He's certainly a worthy player. I think it's appropriate to include somebody out of the transfer portal, and Tinsley at any position. And Tinsley is he might be the first one we've really used out of the portal as a second teamer. So I and look, he was a steady guy. He was a leader. He came right in, did his job. For the Wilkes-Barre people who are going to ask. Eugene Lewis, Geno Lewis was considered, but his numbers weren't what Lambert Smith's were. And he played an extra year. So I went with the guy I thought was the best receiver. Now, Geno Lewis has had an outstanding career in the Canadian Football League. Outstanding. And he was a really, really great player at Penn State. 90 catches, 1,100 yards. Tinsley would have been my pick too. I was kind of surprised you went with that. I thought you were gonna, the way you were
I'm
talking, you would have
surprised that
gone
was your pick
Keandre.
too.
Yeah, I thought you were gonna go Keandre. We'll do linebackers here. I don't want to run out of time on them. You're gonna pick first. You're gonna obviously, oh geez, the 10-minute warning just came up. You're gonna
Wow.
obviously pick
Yeah, I'm gonna take
you're gonna
Micah
take
with that
Jesse
one.
Luketta. Oh, you're gonna take Micah. Okay.
I won't harp for too long, but I mean, we said this, I think, last week. There's a very strong case for Micah just being, the best player that's played under James Franklin. I mean, Saquon obviously is up there as well. Saquon might still be my pick as the, or Olu. There's a lot of guys up there. My point is, Micah was incredible, and he still is, obviously. But he was the best. He was the best linebacker that, I have ever seen play in person, and that's not just on Penn State.
Yeah, I've been covering professional sports since 2002. I've been covering Penn State football since 2004, and Mike is the best athlete I've ever seen. So we're just going to put him on the first team. I don't care what the numbers are, and his numbers are outstanding. I'm going to put him on the first team. The second first teamer here, you might be surprised by this. I was surprised I landed this way. I'm taking Carter.
Wow, yeah, I am surprised.
Yeah, I'm gonna take Carter,
I
and
don't
here's
hate it
why.
though.
No, I don't. No, it's a good pick. I'm not to brag. Micah in 2 years, 18 tackles for loss, 6.5 sacks. Carter in 2 years, 16 tackles for loss, 11 sacks. I think Carter's got a couple interceptions. Carter to me is not as good as Micah, not as polished as Micah, not as freakishly athletic as Micah, as freakishly athletic as Carter is, but he's close. So that puts him at. As the second first teamer for me.
Yeah, I mean, Abdul is he's earned the comparisons to Micah. Now, like you said, he's not Micah, So I think expectations need to press the brakes a little bit. It's let's be fair about this. But at the same time, I don't think it's I Abdul deserves to be on this first team. He's I know he hasn't played at Penn State for very long, yet. But I mean, his production as a freshman bared out consideration, let alone adding on last season's continuation.
Yeah, and I thought he played a more true linebacker spot last year and did well. I certainly think he's a good enough linebacker that you don't necessarily think that moving him to defensive end is a wonderful idea. But I can certainly see why they're doing it, as I mentioned last week. And I do think he's going to have a big year. My second for and our final first teamer. This is one of my favorite Penn State players of all time. But he was more a Bill O'Brien guy. He did play 1 year for James. He played in 14. And I'm just going to go with the one stat. Mike Hull had 138 tackles in 2014. He made almost every stop. Mike Hull has to be on this team. I have to put a middle linebacker on here. I think that's the way you do these. If you're going to make a team, make a real team. But I loved Mike Hull. What he did for Penn State throughout his career. I think he's very, very solid. I thought he was a really good special teamer and he had a really decent NFL career. So Mike Hull is my second first teamer.
I'll say I was surprised because I'm gonna pick a guy that I thought you were gonna end up putting on the first team just because I know you love him too. But I don't think it's a bad pick by any stretch.
No, I love it. I love it. I love those two guys that I got. And I think you're going to take my third guy that I would have picked here too, in a non-Micah world for first teamer.
I think for my first second team selection, I think I'm going to take Curtis Jacobs.
Yeah. Numbers bearing out.
I know you're a big Curtis Jacobs fan.
Like Curtis Jacobs.
I'm with you. I think that he lacks maybe some of the explosiveness that Micah and Abdul bring. It's maybe a less sexy version of the linebacker position, but I think Curtis plays, a true. Not that Micah and Abdul didn't play linebacker, but Curtis plays what you expect from a linebacker. He's what you want. He's the captain of the defense style. He can arrive at any point on the field and do his job. Sideline to sideline type player, and like you said, the numbers bear it out. I think he's a little bit Dotson-y in a way where I think he's somehow flown under the radar for a lot of his career, frankly. I think early in his career, people got excited and then he didn't have the sack numbers maybe that people were excited about and kind of forgot that, no, he plays very well as a linebacker.
Oh no, the sack numbers weren't there. He had 11, no, no, excuse me, 9.5 sacks. That's not that bad. Nothing to sneeze at. But what I liked about Jacobs, big plays and big games. I mean, if you want to look at the Ohio State game last year, if there's not for the penalty on Kalen King, he scores a really big touchdown in that game. Michigan 2 years ago in a game where they had no business being close, he makes a play that keeps them close. He had a decent Rose Bowl. I just like what Jacobs brought all around leadership. The whole package was really good, and I think he'll have a decent NFL career.
This is tough.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be these next couple of picks. There's some interchangeable guys here. I don't want to say interchangeable, but some really, really good players.
Think I'm going to take, and I'm trying not to filibuster too long, so I know we're running out of time, but I think I'm going to take Jason Kabinda,
Okay.
because I think I want to see him on this team. I don't know that he's the fifth pick. But I think I want to see him on this team for a number of reasons. He's number nine on the Penn State career tackles list. And, tackles are always a questionable stat because, they can pile up quickly and what does it actually mean? But I think from a longevity perspective, his he He drew all Big Ten honors, captain style player. It's all the things that I stereotypically have been attracted to in my picks. So I think I'm going to take Kabinda, especially for his role on those that 2016, 2017 run.
He was the literal captain of the defense on those really good teams when they were championship caliber. He played on the two best teams, I think, of the era. He had 285 tackles. That was most of the Franklin era. Yeah, he's solid. I would have picked him if you didn't. So he would have been the sixth pick, if not the fifth. Sixth pick's gonna be Brandon Bell. And I really wanted to consider Cam Brown. I thought Cam Brown did a lot of great things. It's great special teams. Oh, an unbelievable special teams player. Cam Brown had 14 and a half tackles a lot for loss in his career. Bell had 27. Bell played a lot of football, 11 and a half sacks, 226 tackles. That's third in the Franklin era behind Kabinda and the middle linebacker I would have taken if we had three teams, Ellis Brooks. And I think Ellis Brooks is a bit behind Kabinda and behind Mike Hall. Bell was a very dynamic player. And another one, kind of like a Curtis Jacobs guy, different positions. One's a box linebacker and one's not, but I think Bell was a fantastic player for a while. And another guy like Dotson got better as his career went on. So I'm going to take Bell, and I think we got the six linebackers right. So I think that's a job well done today, Sam.
I think so too. I hopefully people aren't too mad.
Yeah,
But
send all your complaints to S. Freeman at ScrantonTimes.com. So, Sam, thanks so much this week. We are dangerously close to running out of time here.
thank you for having me.
All right, we'll finish it up next week with the quarterbacks and the defensive ends. Finish up the offense and defense anyway. All Franklin team running down here. We're putting together a pretty solid roster here. For Sam Freeman, this is Donnie Collins. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week.